We've never seen a perfect marriage.
But we have seen marriages that are full of laughter and life.
Conflict and misunderstandings.
Growth and hope.
We want to dive into the nuts and bolts of those relationships.
There are no experts here. Just real talk with real couples who really like each other.
This is Marriage Lab with Aaron
and Jenna.
Welcome to Marriage Lab. I'm Aaron. This is Jenna.
It's true. I am.
And we wanted to...
Well, first off, it's been a few weeks and... We had got up and running and got kind of more regular and then a few weeks off. And that is, sadly, I had my stepdad passed away suddenly. So I went to the East Coast and we've been... just with my mom, it's actually been beautiful to be able to have the flexibility to be there, like take the time off to be with her in his last week. And then she's come home. So she's currently in our front yard playing with our children.
Yeah.
Which has been such a gift. We were laughing. We're like, Mom, we don't have to make distractions to keep you busy. Our children are distraction number one, number two, and number three.
Yeah. And then even before that, I was out of town. In Texas for a week with Clemmer and Associates doing their advanced leadership seminar, which is personal growth leadership thing, which was phenomenal. Highly recommend it. Go look them up.
I told someone where you were at and they're like, he did it on his own accord. I was like, I know, it's hot. A husband that just wants to grow. What can I say? I'm so lucky. Yeah. we wanted to say shout out though. We have talked about it a few times, but we've started asking if you enjoy the content from the show that you would become a Patreon supporter of the show. The link's always in the show notes. You could be as little as $5 a month. We're just so grateful. But we want to do a shout out to all of our sponsors who've become sponsors to the show since our last one. Do you want to start, babe?
Yeah. Christy Elmer, Joy and Isaac Abad, Daniel Brunsink, Kylie, Sarah W., Louise Lopez. Hey, it's been a long time, Louise.
Aww.
And Rosalinda Hernandez. So thanks, everyone. And my buddy Matt, who's in my online small group, he's like, hey, in one episode you said it's Matt and we don't know who and he goes, it's me. So Matt Kamla, thanks, man.
I was like, if you don't know his last name, that'd be hilarious right now to be like, oh.
And I know
that Matt, you know who you are, Matt.
So it's that Matt. Thanks,
actually,
Matt.
Aaron's online small group, he just finished. So if you are interested or if your husband's interested, what would you say the main points for joining your small group?
If you're feeling stuck in any area, especially the area of sexual purity, that is a big focus of what we go after, just because tends to be one of the bigger things that most guys statistically have some sort of struggle with, whatever that looks like, whatever your cycle is, whether it's like once every 6 months or once a day.
The cool part is like, that's maybe what gets people in the door, but learning how to like feel your emotions, to recognize them, to be able to share them in a helpful way without blame or judgment, vulnerability. It's all the things that most wives would be like, yes.
Yeah. Well, it's the quick discovery that porn is not the problem itself, but your solution to the problem. So we have to discover what the problems are and find better solutions for those problems so that you can actually take care of them. And those main problems, isolation, pain, and passivity, we go after those and we do that in connection. And it was actually really sad ending this last round with those guys. Oh man, I love them. They actually did two rounds with me, and so this
it's been like 6 months, huh?
Yeah, it has been 6 months, but there we do them in 3 month stints. So go check out zintsquad.com. Honestly, you could just email me aaronzint@gmail.com if you're interested. We'll be starting at the end of May.
And then too, I just finished my Habit Lab. It was I think I counted, it was the 12th group that I've taught, which was so cool. The in-person one this time had almost 19 people. But anyone who's listening, if you're an alumni, where I'm offering some small group coaching because you got the foundation in my master course. So you can email me, jennazint@gmail.com. If you're not an alumni, I still do one-on-ones. And again, you can just email me for that. But I've been meeting with a lot more people recently. And it's such a privilege, honestly. I tell that to Aaron all the time. I like to get a front row seat into people's lives and just get to hold, like be with them on part of their journey. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. It is amazing. And I also do coaching and am loving that. And so
you're good at it. When we do marriage coaching, we do marriage coaching together. And I always am like, he's so smart. It feels like I get something out of it. Like watching you do your thing. I'm like, oh, he's so good at this.
Oh, thanks, babe.
Okay. So this week we're going to talk about something, my little tag for this was, do you know the thing that prolongs most conflict?
What is the thing that prolongs most conflict?
The thing that...
What would you say, Jenna?
Keeps people stuck in disconnect.
Mm.
It's the same thing.
What do you want me to say it?
I don't know how to do good pauses. That was supposed to be like a hook, you know, like dun, dun, dun. I guess we need background music.
Also, it's easier to do pauses in a person after you say something, not when you're like waiting for them to answer.
You're like, wait, do you not know the answer to the question? You're just saying. Okay. I would say the thing that prolongs most conflict is the pursuit of fairness.
There you go.
Oh, he just put his hand out. I was like, what?
That was where you pause.
Oh.
Because people go, wait a second. Wait, what? Huh? And they think about it for a second. And then.
The pursuit of fairness prolongs most conflict and keeps people stuck in disconnect.
But fairness is such a good thing, Jenna. Why would this prolong conflict? Tell me about this.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, one, it's interesting because I think like I was processing some of it and I realized like fairness should be a fruit. Cause like if you think about it, you're like, shouldn't a thriving, connected marriage or relationship be fair? And I'm like, yes.
And yeah, maybe can you define what you mean by fairness?
I would say fairness like equality or justice, maybe.
Yeah,
like,
where there's not one person losing in the relationship, whether that is like one person carries way more weight than the other. Oh, we got a sad kid. Pause. And we're back. Child issue solved.
Oh, fun fact though, we got a new mattress and we thought we could just put it on top of the old mattress.
And now we're practically touching the ceiling.
You guys, we're literally more than four feet off the ground. I have to do a running jump to get on the... I mean, this is just... It's literally been less than 24 comical. Hours.
Yeah, I don't know how long we can...
It's like a monster like truck this. When people need a stool to get into their truck. Yeah. We need a stool to get up on our bed currently.
That's true. Okay, so back to fairness.
Yes, fairness.
So we had defined it as like... the idea that there's not one person losing, one person winning. It's equal in the share of responsibility. Mm-hmm. And, you know, those may look very different. Yeah.
Who's the first to like reconnect or get low or
sure, yeah.
clean up messes. Yeah. So I think.
So which sounds like a really good thing. But what you're saying is that's the fruit. It should not be the pursuit.
Ooh, that's yes. I didn't say it that succinctly. I said that. I was journaling about this. Okay. Fairness often hinders love. Why? They're not mutually exclusive. Shouldn't love be fair? Shouldn't we love each other as we love ourselves? Fairness hinders love when we wait to show up in love until the circumstances are fair.
Which doesn't sound like love. When you go like, oh yeah, no, I will love you as long as you love me. Well, actually, it doesn't sound like the love that Jesus called us to.
You're going
to
steal my punchline.
Oh yeah, go ahead, okay. Sorry.
Fairness hinders love when we make it a condition for us to give love away. Fairness hinders love when it's a prerequisite for how we're going to show up in conflict. Fairness hinders love when we justify us mirroring their actions instead of Jesus's actions.
Mm.
Fairness is not a condition that needs to be met first before we choose love, before we buy into connection, before we clean up our own mess, before we apologize. Fairness cannot be a condition of love, or we are not showing up in unconditional love. It is not that thriving, healthy, and whole relationships should not be fair. We're not saying that. But that should be a fruit of love, not fairness being the determiner of love. When we get them in the wrong order, so fairness before love, it becomes a stumbling block. When we get them in the wrong order in our pursuit of them, we perpetuate pain. When we get them in the wrong order, we prolong conflict. So again, like you said, it should be the fruit, not the determiner.
Yeah, not the pursuit.
The pursuit, yeah. That's what you said. So much better.
Okay. And so why? What happens when you pursue fairness instead of love? So like, I feel hurt and by something you said, and we kind of, maybe we had a conflict and we didn't quite end it and it's still going on. So I'm like, well, it was, you know, if she... I'm usually the one who does XYZ, who goes and apologizes first. So I think it's time that she apologizes first because, yeah, that seems only fair. So right. Maybe that's a situation where you might be pursuing it.
Pursuing fairness over unconditional love, like how you're going to show up. Yeah. Or for me, sometimes too, it's like, I'll think like when I realize that my goal has shifted from connection to fairness, like what am I protecting? Mm. It's, I would say sometimes I think through like, well, he made the mess, therefore he should clean it up. Or like, I'm going to wait. I shouldn't have to, like phrases like I shouldn't have to.
Yeah.
Are
yeah,
usually yeah. pretty indicative to me. It's like a check engine light that That's my good. Goal has shifted from love or unconditional love to fairness. Mm. And again, I think I don't want people to hear that a loving, healthy, thriving marriage should not be fair.
Right, right, right.
But when you make it a condition for how you show up, that is when it's unhelpful.
Yeah. And if this is everything we talk about, you have to, especially when if you're in a relationship and you're like, yeah, you make sure that that emphatic yeah is about you, not about your partner. Like, yeah, they should really stop pursuing fairness, which is you trying to make the relationship more fair. And so, well, pause again. Child needs.
Okay.
I just said, sorry, it's so choppy, Aaron. And he said,
I ain't editing it.
So you're getting all the fullness of real life up in here, yeah. people.
Yeah. All this pursuit, like when this is when we have to recognize this for ourselves, recognizing it in other people, not helpful.
Yeah.
The majority of everything that we talk about is revelations that we get or have heard from other people that we are taking into our own lives, not going like, hey, Jenna, you should really listen to this. You
know? It's so true. I think even just for me noticing, like, I know I said it, but like the shouldn't have to, should have, like when I go into that, like when it's, we've come to a spot where we've been working, honestly, when I'm waiting for you to make the next move.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, that's, I think right there. When I'm waiting, when you're waiting, when I'm waiting for my spouse, for my friend, for my parent to do, you know, in what might be in my mind, the right thing. Like they made a mess with me. Maybe I handled myself really well. And then you think about the life of Jesus and how offensively unfair he called us to love in such a way. Hey, if somebody slaps you on the cheek, give them the other cheek. You're like, that is the opposite of fair. It feels like the opposite of justice. And he goes, hey, you know, when these people who are ruling over you, who are very unjust, these Romans, and that one of them goes like, hey, I want your tunic, you give me some, I don't know, whatever he asked for, some article of clothing. He goes, give him something else as well. And you're like, what? That's extra. That's like extra unfair. I'm already receiving a lack of fairness. And Jesus goes like, this is why it's a narrow way to walk this. Like this is the way that he's called us. But you had written this down. Jesus didn't promise fairness in unconditional love. And he certainly didn't receive it when he walked on earth, nor does he say it's a caveat for us walking in love. So this is the life of Jesus shows a lack of fairness. How quickly the veil was torn when Jesus sacrificed fairness. He sacrificed fairness when he got up on the cross and goes, hey, actually what's fair is that you pay the price for this. Mm. You pay the price for what you purchased. You sinned. This is what's expected
what's
of you.
What's owed to you.
What's owed to you. And so basically we have a relationship with a God who said, hey, just so you know, I'm going to take fairness off the table and I'm going to give you what you didn't deserve and I'm not going to give you what you did deserve. So deserve punishment, not going to give it to you. Didn't deserve mercy, going to give it to you.
And like literally that's our standard for showing up in marriage.
And that's how he absolutely changed the face of humanity. That's how he changed the world is through a lack of fairness. This is how you're going to change your marriage. 100%. Is when you give up your right. Like, yeah, everyone has a right to fairness unless you want to walk in love.
So good. I actually felt like the Lord was like, fairness can be an idol that trumps your pursuit of walking in love. Like even what you were saying about, I was going to read the part of like with, let's see. Oh.
Is it where you said, the idol of fairness has been toppled.
Oh, well, I was going to say that often connection is only found after we choose to make the first move to lay our right to fairness on the altar. But right. That offensive move, which it usually offends you, ushers in and expedites reconciliation in a way fairness cannot. I think that's the part that gets me.
Yeah.
When I was thinking about this, how quickly the veil was torn when Jesus sacrificed fairness when he got up on that cross. How quickly we were reconciled in a way, I said 1,500 years. I think it might have been more than that.
2,000.
Okay, 2,000 years of Old Testament sacrifices, fair sacrifices never could do.
Oh, no, it's a yeah, 4,000. Sorry. Oh. That's irrelevant, but I couldn't help it. But the general idea was like Moses-ish to...
Okay. Yeah. So the point, though, is that fairness, if you're pursuing fairness, you might move the dial more towards equality. But when you're pursuing fairness instead of unconditional love, the power that unconditional love has is like total reconciliation, reformation, and fairness doesn't.
Yeah. Fairness has no transformational power.
Yes. And that's the thing is like, oh, it costs more upfront, mm-hmm. but what you see, it grows. Like when you plant it, what grows out of that is something that fairness cannot offer you. And it's hard because it feels like you're laying down this thing that's going to get what you need, but actually this other that costs more up front, yeah. but you're like, that's actually the way to break through. I remember when I stopped, I can't speak to you, so I know you do this all the time and I'm not implying that, but I remember when I stopped letting that narrative of like, but it's not fair, or I've done it, or keeping score how many times I did, or and I think the difference for me is sometimes I did feel sad or pain that it felt like maybe I was doing something more often, but I didn't let it stop me from choosing unconditional love.
Right.
And the cool part is like, one, I don't think that's true at all. Like we have different ways of strengths in our marriage, but I think like, oh, I know that I feel like there's a lot of fairness in the fruit of our unconditional love, but I stopped pursuing it. That being my main pursuit.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was like a game changer for me.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I like, so when I, cause there's sometimes when I've wrestled, not with you, but there's been other relationships that I've really laid down, like in unconditional love, kept showing up when something was really unjust or unfair or not equal.
Right.
And I remember at one point, it was probably like the third generous act of love I was doing that cost me everything. It was not, I'm not saying I was like, yes. I was like, oh, Jesus, this is sandpaper to my soul. And it was, I was like, what if they never, like, what if it never transforms them? Like Aaron, I know his character and I've seen how he shows up. I know that like that's the foundation of a relationship. What if I'm the only one showing up in unconditional love? And I felt like the Lord was just like, I never not see when you show up in unconditional love and it's not met, it's not wasted. To me, that was the big question. I was like, is it wasted? And he was like, if you actually believe love never fails, then that seed you're planting of unconditional love, you might not reap it in their, like you might not reap the harvest from their lives, but I'm never wasting any of those seeds. So I think like this longevity mentality of like, he wastes nothing we do. And even just, I keep on thinking when I've been doing this specific relationship, these things cost me. I'm like, oh, the pain of not being met with that and continuing to do that. The Lord is like, this is because it costs something. It costs everything. Oh, yeah. It's like what at the opposite of what you want to do.
Right.
So I'm like, isn't that the epitome of a sacrifice though?
Yeah.
We say like sacrifices in other areas, but I think like the unconditional love when it's not met in the same is that level of sacrifice to Jesus, not to that person. I think that's it. I put my eyes higher than that person.
Yeah.
I'm like, you're worth it, Jesus. I cannot say right now that I feel like this is, but you're worth this. I know that I'm like, this is the sacrifice of Jesus getting his full reward. Like my offensive act of love that is not fair is actually to Jesus. And it's something we can only give him. I always think about like on this side of eternity, because we're not going to have those sacrifices in love when we're in heaven. So I'm like, there's such a limited time. Like it hurts so bad, but also I know this is part of your inheritance. So I'm willing, not there yet all the time for that person, but I'm willing to do it for you. So it's just like, I almost have to like shift my eyes higher.
Yeah. And you know, even in scripture when he says like, hey, when you do some, one of these things, like you feed the poor and take care of the widow and the orphan, or you do one of these things to the least of these, you're doing it for me. And so you even think about when you choose to love somebody and they don't deserve it. When they, especially when they don't deserve your forgiveness. Mm. They don't deserve
your mercy.
Your mercy. They don't deserve a bid for connection.
Yeah.
Because you've offered
so many.
That's
usually what forgiveness and mercy look like, I feel like, so often.
A bid for connection.
Yeah, a simple bid for connection.
That is, I mean, you're doing that unto Jesus. Like, that is, he's the people who are undeserving. Like, that's, in this context, that's the least of these. Mm. And I also see that because we were once those people, and he did it for us. And so I think that's a really good way of looking at it. We have a good friend who, I'm just going to tell her story. She gave birth to twins after having two kids and was not expecting twins, just expecting a third child. And then they found out and were like, dang. And then one of her twins broke her leg. I think
the 2-year-old right. broke the leg when she had twins.
Oh, when she had infant twins. Yeah. Yes, that's what it was.
In the middle of COVID.
Oh my gosh. It was so gnarly. Incredibly difficult. And they had a 2-story house. And her carrying her middle child up and down the stairs.
And do you remember she almost had heart failure? She got septic and she had to be hospitalized.
She almost died in giving birth to those twins. Then, and so during the day, her husband's at work and she's carrying her 2-year-old with a broken leg. With that cast is heavy, you know, makes them heavier already. She's going up and down the stairs for different things. And she told us this story one night. We were having Sabbath meal together and she said that she was getting a massage, and the person who was doing the massage, it's pretty cool in town. A couple people do like prophetic massages where they'll like pray over you while they massage you, and they'll, you know, tell you things that they hear God saying. Anyways, it wasn't even something this lady said who was giving her a massage, but she suddenly felt like the Lord was like, hey, every time you carried your daughter up and down the stairs, mm-hmm. like I saw that and it was for me. And like, she just started weeping. Like, it's just one of those things that you're like, this is just freaking hard.
Yeah.
This thing that I'm doing just sucks. The simple act of taking care of your kids, which feels like, yeah, okay, there's a baseline there. Like, yes, you got to do it. But like, he sees it, he saw it. And I just feel that same kind of thing that feels, it doesn't feel like I am, you know, revolutionizing the world when we're both in pain and I just go and decide to give you a hug, or I say, hey, I love you, or, you know, whatever that bid for connection looks like. It doesn't feel revolutionary, but it absolutely is. Like, those are the acts that will save a marriage. Those are the small little things that will actually absolutely change the world. So this
I was going to say, those big small things, even just not as spiritual, have, like I said at the beginning, like what prolongs conflict. Choosing those moments when I see it and the choice and doing it quickly versus like waiting and prolonging it really has shortened our conflict so much, and we find connection in peace. It's ironic because it feels like the opposite, you know, like it's gonna cost too much, but I'm like, actually that's the shortest way through. It's like through that. And I was gonna say, one of the things is that there's sometimes when I can't, like, honestly, I don't have it in me to be like, they're worth the sacrifice of me choosing unconditional to show up in unconditional love and not pursue fairness in this moment. I can't say that I feel like they are worth it, whoever's in front of me. But those are the moments, like, I honestly, at one point I felt like Jesus was behind them. He's like, almost like poked his head out behind, like to the side, you know, like, he's like, but am I worth it?
Mm.
And I was like, okay. So like those times that I'm like, I can't, like, I would almost say it's like not habit, but like a tip to be like, I'm not actually asking you if this person in front of you is worth your unconditional
love. Do they deserve it?
Yeah. That's actually not on the table. Mm-hmm. Do I deserve your unconditional love? Can you love me through this act to them? And I'm like, yeah, because that answer is so much easier to get to when you're heightened and in pain. So I would just challenge that as well. And then even just watch, like, has fairness become an idol, like a stumbling block for love with you? Has it started hindering how you show up when you're in pain? Has your pursuit of fairness hindered your love?
It's good.
I was going to say, you'll know that the idol of fairness has been toppled when in the heat of pain, you make a move that feels like sandpaper to your skin. And I know it sounds so silly, but I feel like that is literally what it feels like when I'm like, want to stay where I'm at. I feel justified. I have my heels in, or even just like neutral, but I choose the opposite of what I feel. It's like, That's what I imagine sandpaper to my skin. That's, I was like, that is actually the feeling of dying to yourself. Mm. If we believe the scripture that when you, that, that when you, you should be glad, because when you're in pain or suffering, that's when you're sharing in a teeny tiny portion of the suffering of Christ. I actually think of those moments where I'm like, it almost feels offensive because like when you say it like that, but when you're in the moment and it feels like sandpaper to your skin.
It feels like the most awful thing in the world. You think about it in terms of, we just taught a class in the school of ministry on listening really well. And one of the main things that we go after when we talk about how to listen in conflict is how to ride the wave of defensiveness. And that is an act of love to not let your defensiveness derail your listening and your validating of their experience. And that feels like, sometimes it feels like the most unjust, awful thing in the world, because sometimes people are really bad at communicating and they'll blame the heck out of you. They'll judge you, they'll blame you, they'll interpret all your reactions.
You know what it makes me think of though is when Jesus was getting all the accusations and how often he stood silent. I'm like, oh, he actually led by example here too.
And so that is dying to yourself. In most modern day, we don't have a ton of martyrs, you know. Well, we do in a lot of like more volatile countries.
I said yeah too, and then I was like, oh, you're right, we do.
We do. Yeah, we're just
in the United States or Western world,
right? But an act of laying down your life many times is just allowing your spouse to share their pain and you not getting defensive about it, or you not letting that, the defensiveness that you naturally will feel, not letting that override your ability to validate them, hear them, and just hold a space for their pain. And then, so when you talk about dying to yourself, I think, oh yeah, that's actually one of the best ways that, or one of the ways I die to myself most often, is just by
listening well.
Yeah, listening well when I want to defend myself.
That's really good. I would say that, dear listeners, I don't know, that sounds funny. But if you hear my voice right now, that sounds worse too. I didn't do it. Okay, my challenge for you would though, begin to notice when you're in pain, when you change your goal and you're pursuing, your pursuit has become fairness, not connection. So actually notice when what you're defending is, but it's not, I shouldn't have to, I always have to be the one, it's not my turn. That is like signs your goal has changed and like fairness has become your standard. Can you choose to show up in those moments? Can you actually make the radical choice right then to show up in love instead of fairness? Your actions believe, or your actions reflect what you believe to be true, and your beliefs are reflected in your actions. So the question is, do you actually believe that love never fails? If you do, prove it. Make the sandpaper to the soul choice to choose love over fairness.
Okay.
That's it.
Anything you want to say to close us out?
Support our podcast.
Link. How do they find that?
It's in the show notes. But, I started choking on my own spit right then. It got awkward.
Patreon.com/thehabitlab, which covers the marriage lab as well.
That's both of us. Thanks for your patience, guys. We'll get back into a rhythm now.
Yep. And for those of you listening years in the future from this April 2024.
What's it like in the year 3000?
Yeah, they're going to be like, oh, there's no time at all. Just blazing through, binging through these. So anyways, enjoy.
Bye.